like this. The DL debate is brought to you by the Dry Arch Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.
Welcome one and all to another episode of the DL Debate, Donegal's GA show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you're all keeping safe and well in these strange times, and hopefully we can keep you entertained over the next hour with our GA show. First up, I have the main man in Donegal GA. It is our current county chairman, Mick McGrath. How are you today, sir?
Good evening, Brendan. How are you?
Not too bad, Mick. I woke up this morning to a headline, Logistical Nightmare Ahead, Mick McGrath. It was, are you going to manage to nurse us through this nightmare, Mick? That was pertaining, of course, to the game after, the Tyrone game coming up this week, the away trip to Kerry.
Well, yeah, it's a complete new challenge, and I suppose that's what this is all about. When we pleaded, I suppose, with everybody to try to get people back out onto the field in June, and we didn't envisage this happening, but sure, we probably thought in June that the COVID would have disappeared when we came around to September, October, and it hasn't, and we just have to deal and with the seriousness of it all and go by the guidelines that are there. Some of them are difficult and testing, but we have to go by them.
Yeah, unprecedented times, Mike. It's very difficult. You know, it's really, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You've got to try and work with it, and I know the whole association is doing it as a whole. You'd said to me about that, or you quoted us a Zoom meeting, and the rest of the chairmen were on board trying to get together a plan that works, Mick. Of course, our county final has had to be delayed, and we'll see when that evolves. But first up, we have Tyrone coming down the line this week, and what's a huge game for us, Mick. You know, we haven't cemented our first division status yet. You know, we're coming into the game with nobody has no form, no momentum, so very important to hit the ground running.
Well, absolutely, and I suppose the whole panel that are training there at the moment, have come back from their clubs now, and that brings its own issues as well, and getting everybody up to speed and getting them to playing as a unit. You've been used to playing with your clubs maybe a different way, and you're playing with different players, so that's all happening within a short space of time. And as you rightly said, both Tyrone and Donegal are meeting twice within a fortnight, and they're two important games because both teams will probably want to cement their position within Division 1. I think Tyrone's a point ahead of Donegal at the moment on in the league, but Donegal have to win one of their last two matches to make sure of that. And being at home to Tyrone is not easy, but having a trip away to Kerry 7 days later would be a little bit more difficult. But with the whole logistics that we've just touched on, connected with that. But the big one, I would think, is the championship match in a few weeks' time. But they'll not be thinking of that next Sunday. It's an important match for both sides, and Donegal will be taking it very serious.
Yes, Mike, you have Mayo, obviously, is the team. Meath have been relegated, as we know. Mayo's the one team that's trying to claw out of it, still in 3 points. They're playing Galway. You know, it's a derby game. Should they win that, they're probably thinking, listen, we could Houdini it again and climb out of there. So people talked about Donegal and Tyrone, you know, initially, Mike, that there could be a bit of shadow boxing, but the game is too important to both teams for that. They basically will have to go at it.
Well, everybody will have their own opinion, Brendan, on what's going to happen, but not until the game starts will you know what way it levels itself out. Mm. I don't think either team will want to lose it, and that's the important thing. Donegal, as I said, will be taking it very serious, and we are taking it serious. We'll not want to lose it. That's the bottom line on it.
And Mick, just a word on the trip to Kerry that's coming up after that. Is there different ways that you can approach it around? You know, everybody's straight away thinking about, say, a hotel. Is there different ways that you can sort accommodation, or could it come down that we just go down and play the game and come back? I know there was talk of a possible neutral ground somewhere in between, but that didn't materialise.
The neutral ground was voiced by people that weren't in contact, really. There was just no opinions that were being expressed by journalists. But it's a home game for Kerry, so Kerry aren't going to give up a home game, and they're certainly entitled to their home venue. So we have to travel. The game's fixed for Tralee, and the logistical nightmare is that you can't have more than 20 people on a 45-seater bus at the moment, so it means we have to take two buses with us. 20 on each. You can't share bedrooms, so there's no twinning up of players. Everybody has to get their own individual room, which means we can only travel a party of 40. That's the guideline from Croke Park. And so it's 40 people, 20 on each bus, and 40 single rooms. And that's what we'll probably travel. We are travelling down on the Friday night, and that's where we're planned at the moment. Play the game on the Saturday at 2 o'clock. And return home then, a long trip back from Tralee, but that's what we're laid up with.
Yeah, that's interesting, Mick. And of course, at the moment, with, you know, finances not coming in, that's adding to the finances, which is already under serious pressure. And something I suppose you're hoping to alleviate, Mick, is the great success so far of the house draw. We passed the 10,000 mark, and now there's only a certain amount of tickets left, but the draw's going really well.
Yeah, it was a huge undertaking. A group of people came together when the facilities were being developed at Convoy, and I've spoken before on the show about it. And it's a £5.5 million project, and of which there's £2.2 million being spent on the new building down there, which is now completed. And to pay for all of that, we decided we'd buy a house in Dublin and raffle it off. It's a €400,000 house, and that's what's happening at the moment. We've just gone over the 10,000 ticket sales over the weekend, which is fantastic. And the committee aren't looking for any slaps on the back at the moment, because they're they're determined to sell all the tickets. And we still have a few thousand tickets left, and we intend to sell them all. And it's not late, too late yet for listeners to purchase a ticket. You can purchase a ticket online, winyourhouseindublin.com, and there's still tickets can be purchased. It's very simple to buy them online. So anyone out there that really has the GAA at heart, we would ask for their support, including yourself, Brendan. I just noticed your name's not down here. But we'll be getting you, Brendan, before the draw's
made. Yeah, they put one away the last day in the bar, but it cost me that much when I was in the bridge bar there that I had no money left in before I went to leave, Mick. So it's the price of pints and the bridge caught me.
The bar's been closed for 7 months. You can't use that as an excuse.
That was the last time I was down, though. Was the Monaghan game, remember, just before
this
kicked off. Surely, Mick, you make sure you have that for me in Bala Buffet. I'll scrape up the money, sure.
We get a loan out of somewhere, Brendan. I think it's very, very testing times with the COVID, and trying to, to continue playing sport. And lots of people don't understand the ins and outs of it. But there's a lot of pressure on our young people at the moment out there, between students at school and young people trying to play sport. And I think it's a great escape valve for them, you know, to get out there, because there's a lot of anxiety and stress and mental health issues that we've got to battle on against. And it's strange times for everybody. It's not so much the elderly that at the beginning attacked the COVID, but it's the young people now. So it's moving around, and the goalposts are moving slightly on it all, and we've got to address all the changes as they come at us, and work very, very hard and with the guidelines. And that's what I would ask everybody that's listening to do. Just keep working hard on the guidelines. Wear a mask, wash your hands, the simple things that we've been told to do since the middle of March. And I think that's the main thing. And I would also say that, you know, to give the older people that you know, give them a phone call every now and then, because I know they enjoy it. And talk about sport, talk about the weather, talk about anything, but just to chat to people is good as well. And I think we can all do that.
Yeah, there's some great advice there, Mick. And it's so difficult at the minute, between the restrictions and then between letting people have, you know, particularly people, as you said, need a call, or kids need to get out to play a bit of sport with each other. Or it's so difficult trying to marry the two at the minute, Mick. So hopefully, you know, this situation will improve over time, and we can get back to some level of normality. Mick, just around the training centre and Convoy, you gave myself and Oisin a tour there. I was blown away by it. I'm just wondering, Mick, when the lads come down there now in the full finished complex, has there been a different vibe? Have you noticed anything different from the lads? Because I'm sure that has a feel, a drop-down effect in terms of the professionalism that's around the place now, with the team going back to train there.
Well, absolutely, because there's a complete new set of guidelines. We're working in pods of five and six, and you know, we're very much guided by and directed by the guidelines that we're working under. And you know, as I said, since the middle of March, we motored right through to, I think it was the 25th of June, when club action got back in, and then the middle of September, the county training. So you know, the main things, I suppose, to remember is that you're 19 times less likely to get any type of COVID contact outdoors than indoors, and even that's when you're playing the game. So I think the indoors part of it is the part that we have to be rigidly strong on, and the outdoors isn't. And we're following not alone just national health guidelines, but it's all been worked under the World Health Organization as well, and you know, it's important that we keep up to speed in it. And I know even tonight that there's a meeting of all the medics and the team doctors are on a Zoom call with Croke Park tonight, just to tighten up really on what's happening next weekend and what you're allowed and what you're not allowed, and have uniformity around it, and be very, very strict on what we're doing. So it's very, very important that we follow all those things, and that there's the guidelines are there to help us and prevent the spread. And on the casual contacts that's required, we'll be following all of those very rigidly.
Yeah, Mick, listen, great stuff. And Mick, I just wanted to ask you, the 25 years ago, you know, the team gets honoured at the county final. Obviously, it was Killy Beggs, and that can't happen this year whenever our final does go ahead. I was just going to do a bit of a kickback to them and to that championship under Niamh Columba, but also we'll look back to the intermediate and junior. I was just wondering, as chairman, should we be highlighting, you know, the junior and intermediate, you know, maybe put them in the programme, kind of get the team together? Because I know county final is a big, big day as well, but I'm just thinking, I would like to highlight, you know, the teams, because I was just thinking, I was involved in the junior championship 25 years ago myself, and it's been a reason to get everybody together. But I'm just wondering, from that final, should the county board highlight the team, maybe put a picture in before and after, or the lads current day, and get that team together, maybe get them to the game to watch the final?
Well, I think that it was a good idea that Donegal brought out some years ago, that the team that won the county senior championship was recognised 25 years afterwards, and they normally, the club that they come from will normally have some type of a function on the Saturday night, and then they attend the county final on the Sunday as a guest of the county board, and that came in some years ago, but it's only happened with the senior football champions. But there's nothing stopping the intermediate champions of 25 years ago or junior champions in having a rekindle of bringing everybody back home and bringing them all together again, because teams do get scattered all over the place, as you know, and indeed there are some players that would be living not too far away from one another, and they just go different lifestyles, and they lose contact when they stop playing sport, and that's basically it, and it's no harm to get them all up and going. Of course, COVID related again this year, we can't do that, and there's no function to get together, but it's certainly something that I would be warm to, and I would think there's a definitely a welcome there for us if it occurred at all levels.
Yeah, and let's make, I suppose, for me, going from having won the junior championship to won the senior, but there's no real kind of the importance of both at the times were exactly the same. And I know, of course, the county final is a big day, but I think we're GA, you know, whatever team you're playing in, the importance is huge there, and I think it's up to us to kind of promote that look back and value it. So I'm glad you're on board, and I'll follow that up with you, Mick. And listen, keep up the good work there. You're a great county chairman, hey, and great talking to us, Mick, this evening, and highlighting Donegal now and their quest to stay in Division 1 and get a crack at Sam.
Thank you, Brendan. Best of luck, Mick, to you.
Right, folks, in the next few weeks, we'll be looking back at championship winning teams. Now, I know at senior level, the county championship 25 years ago are paraded before the county final, and I think that should happen across the three grades. You know, our history is important, and of course those good days, there's a lot fewer of them than the tough days, let me tell you. And just looking back, Buncrana and Killy Beggs, I'm going to highlight their championship winning teams next week, but this week I'm going back to 1994, to the junior championship winning team. It was some new kids on the block. A new club by the name of Niamh Columkill was formed in the Newton, St John's and Kerrigan's and Calais area. Its manager was a man larger than life. His name was Declan McFarlane, and he joins me on the show this evening. How are you, Declan?
How are you, Brenton?
I'm the very best, sir. Great to hear from you.
And I'm still part of the Red and White Army. We won't forget those fantastic days. Magic.
Magic days, Declan. You know, people talk about the wind blowing, people blowing in from different areas, but you know, that day it was a magic wind that blew you in as a Garda. You ended up stationed at Kerrigan's, and you brought, you know, a rich tradition of football from your home place in Monaghan.
That's correct, Brendan. I was delighted to get the chance to take over Dave Columkill. I had great success in County Monaghan myself, playing at all underage levels, minor, under 21 and senior. And our motto was Veni, Vidi, Vici. We came, we saw, we conquered.
There was no stopping you, Dick. Dick, you put together a team there. You brought such a buzz to the area. There was no club there for a few years. The Neve Baithen team disbanded. Soccer was very big in the area. So it was going to take, you know, all the lads obviously had a love for Gaelic. Some of them were Gaelic first. But you really energised the whole place. And from the off, as you said, we were coming. We were going to conquer.
That's correct, Brendan. After Neve Baithen, the pitch was in Carrigans. I'll just go back a year or so. Neve Baithen won the first competitive outing. They beat Pettigo in the Shield final. And your dad and myself and Sean Devaney, your dad's your uncle, were all playing against Pettigo. And the reading was at that time, Neve Baithen make history. That was in 1990. So James Dowd asked me then, would I take over Neve Columkill? And at that time, soccer was very strong. We had a lot of boys playing in Ulster Senior Leagues, Kildrum Tigers, Newton had a fantastic team. And the facilities were there in Neve Columkill, great pitches. So it's just a matter of gelling the soccer lads along with the local Gaelic lads together and forming a team, Brendan.
Yeah, well, you certainly did that, Dick. At the time I was playing with St Dunans, we had been involved in a couple of big minor championships and got into Ulster. And I remember the squad car pulled into the house and a man in uniform hopped out. It was yourself, Declan, and I still remember you and Dad in the kitchen. Give us a year, Benny. Give us a year. That was your line. And of course, between yourself and my dad, there was only going to be one answer. But to be honest, Dick, that time, those few years with Neve Columkill, they were special times, Dick. This was before, even before mobile phones, I suppose, you know, before the crappy blanket defences, you know, people played in their positions, you got stuck in, made a best team one type of scenario. There's a real sense of enjoyment around the games, Dick. It was non-stop crack off the pitch, it was serious business on it, but it was a great time to be playing football.
It was absolutely fantastic, and no phones at them, it was all contact. You went to a person's house and you got an answer, yes or no, and... If you said no, you sort of persuaded him to say yes, and you got him out by the back of the neck and says, Neve Baithen is your club now for the next 5 years. Neve Columkill is your club. So, Brendan, it was fantastic. When we were going to the matches at that time, Brendan, we went on the bus. Willie Toy used to drive the bus. And we'd head maybe away at 12 o'clock in the day, and we went to places like... Ardra, Kilcar, Killybegs, St. Michael's, Dunfanaghy, all over the county. And I'll never forget one time we went down to Killybegs, and Killybegs had a packed team that actually were playing their senior team. And we had a lot of fit lads there with playing soccer with all the Devennies and yourself and McDades, and everybody was in pretty good shape. So... they played a short passing game at that time, and it took us a while to adapt. And I remember you, Brendan, there, you had an injury there, and you didn't want to play because you had a championship game coming up, a minor championship game coming up. So I persuaded you anyway, says, will you go in full forward? I'd rather have you on one leg, Brendan. So it was hilarious, Brendan. On that particular day, you scored 2 goals and 6 points, and we weathered the storm and we beat Killybegs.
That's right.
And I'll never forget, Brendan, we went up to the little shed they had for the tea and sandwiches and things like that. But the World Cup games were on. Ireland were playing Holland. And I'll never forget, all the boys went to the Harbour Bar in Killybegs to watch the match. And there was only myself and this elderly man, lovely man, and we had a cup of tea. And he kept saying to me, who are you? Where are you from? He says, you should be playing senior football. So there was great friendships made all along.
Yeah. No, listen, 100%, Dick. Listen, roll on. The championship itself, you know, come back. It's that long ago now. I can only remember bits and pieces of it. We beat Neve Murray in the final, which was an Inch team that that doesn't exist anymore. And I just remember the buzz about the place and you know, being so young at that time, real excitement, you know. A lot of you older guys, we looked to keep us settled, but later on that night, it was probably the opposite way around. But fantastic times, Dick, to come straight in and win a championship.
Oh, absolutely. It was strange to Newton Cunningham and surrounding areas there, and it was trying to get people on board. There was great support from Seamus Doherty and James McGrath, Willie Tye, James Dowds. All the local people bought into what we were trying to achieve. And Nevemore were a local team, sort of basically Fawn, Inch, Buncrana area, so they're quite a big pick themselves, and they were an unknown quantity to ourselves. But we prepared well, and we had a good balanced team, and we didn't fear anybody at that stage because we were on a run. We actually, in that particular year and previous year, we went in 32 games undefeated, Brendan. Mm. And at the end of the day, we made history. We were the first team from Dave Columkill to win the junior championship. And it was a fantastic time for local people. Some people were crying. There was bonfires lit, and it was a very happy atmosphere. We enjoyed our football. We enjoyed the crack on the buses going to matches, and the community were a wonderful community, and we got great support all around St. Johnson, Clay, and surrounding areas.
Yes, yes. I'll just read you out the team. Marty Killen in goals, Jerry McDade, James Clark, Murray O'Donnell, full back line, half back line, Marty Quinn, John McFadden, Dermot O'Donnell. Midfield, Rona McKinley. I don't remember that boy playing. Dominic Hargan, Kieran Killen, half forward with myself, number 11 with A and another 12. I can't remember who you stuck in there. Dick, Paul Killen inside, Patrick McGee and Tony Mourne. That was the starting team, Dick. Plenty of scores on that side.
Oh, plenty of talent there. You could not go wrong. We had young fellas there got on under 21 county teams. Mark Callan, yourself, top senior man, Brendan. We had Murray O'Donnell actually in the early days got on. We had Darcy Callaghan played against Tyrone in 1991, scored 7 points,
yeah.
And never got a chance to get on the county team again. Yeah. I don't know why. We were a small club, and I know the boys won All Ireland in 1992, so there was a lot of competition for places that time. But yes. That Tyrone under 21 team went on to win All Ireland. They beat Kerry in the final.
Yes.
So we had loads of talent, all the Callaghans, yourself. We had Big Dom Harrigan dominating things in midfield. We had The Rock, Capitan, John McFadden, Thou Shalt Not Pass, James Clark, Diesel, Murray O'Donnell, Marty Quinn, Bugsy O'Donnell. A lot of nicknames around Newton at that time.
That's
Brandon,
right.
Gary McDade.
That's right. That's right. You had Morris Tone, Liam Killen, Emmett Lynch, Wayne McDade,
yeah.
Aidan McDade.
Played the league and with Martin Conroy and Tony Morton.
Yeah. Gregory McDade, Mark Killen, Jerry Dillon. Declan McFarlane was on the subs along with Patrick Devaney and Eamon McConnachley. The old stalwarts were in the background in case they were needed.
Well, Patrick, your dad... at the start, I wanted Patrick to come along with me, and we were a bit like Clough and Taylor. We were the two musketeers, and whatever we said was gospel. So sometimes we might have got it all, was all right, but Packy always backed me up, and I packed Packy, your dad, up. So we had a very good relationship.
Yeah, Dick, listen, in terms of blanket offence and where football's gone now, would you like to be a manager in the modern game now, or do you see football going down the... club football going into a bad place for me at the minute, with defence first being the attitude of a lot of teams?
Well, at that time, Brendan, when I was brought up with always playing direct football. We never played the ball back to the goalkeeper. In my playing days there, do you know what I mean? I was always a defender myself, and then I moved up front to the forward line. And I think there's too much passing of the ball at the moment, and there's not enough kick passing. We used to be able to kick the ball from the full-back line and get a half-forward there, and he was always running onto it. And we had a great understanding. Players knew what each other were doing. There was no players hiding behind men looking for the handy ball. You're always coming to attack the ball all the time. And I know there's good things now at the moment, and the pace of the game is hectic. And I think by kicking the ball back, I think it slows down the game. If a forward has made his run, he can gain maybe 5 yards on his defender. And I think if you get that kicking accurate ball into the forward there, you can do more damage than passing the bloody ball back and taking it 4 or 5 minutes to get up the field again.
Totally agree, Dick. You're lucky though, if you have a forward inside at times, there's that many and be pulled back, unfortunately, Dick, and hopefully that'll change. Dick, just a quick word on the sevens. Obviously that junior championship took us up to St Jude's, and you know, we eat the peach, rock the cash, but it was all go to Dublin. Honestly, Dick, probably the best, you know, it's up there, the best weekends of my life, St Jude's. You know, real buzz about Dublin because of all Ireland was on, and all us lads away together. Some fantastic memories.
Oh, absolutely. When you win the junior championship, you get invited to play in the St Jude's All Ireland 7-a-side, and it's a fantastic weekend. We had a bit of experience. We practiced a bit of sevens side, basically among ourselves, and we were sort of prepared. And we didn't know what to expect because we knew we were going to come up the cream of the country. So we got loaded up, stopped in Monaghan. We got a cargo of like a beer and things like that, and we were all rocking. And we got ready for a party if we were successful that particular night. So the place was buzzing, but we were well behaved. We got there. And it was a long tournament because we had to play 5 games to win the final. And it was a credit to you lads, Brendan. We were only allowed to bring a team of 10. And it was fantastic what just went through for them 5 games, stamina, fitness, everything like that. Yeah. And that team there, we had Ray Little, Dom Harkin, Mark Callahan, the great Brendan O'Divna, Diesel, Bordy, Kieran Callahan, Capitan John McFadden, Mark Callahan, and Paul Callahan. We had the three Callahan brothers there. We had Brendan Devaney, cousin of the Callahans, and we had two other far out relations, the other Callahans. So it was fantastic buzz. We started off the first game against a very strong Cork team, that famous player Brian Corcoran was playing, and he solo run up the field 3 or 4 times and stuck it over the bar. And I said to John McFadden, "You're a capitan, we're not coming here to be run over." Says I, "Hit that man," says I, "the next time he comes up that field." So John McFadden went in and hit him a crushing tackle, and John was only half the size of him. Well, Brian Corcoran never came up the field again, and we ended up getting a draw in that game and progressed on then to win the final and have a fantastic evening in and around in and around Dublin. And then the next day, I was lucky to get a ticket to go to the Ireland final. Tyrone and Dublin were playing. And I left the boys, Brendan and yourself, and the gang there in the old triangle.
Yes, boy.
And yes, we're rocking when we got back. And we hit the road and had a meal down in Navan. And yes, we're all dressed in the red and white army colours and got back to Newton Cunningham in the early hours of the morning, bonfires blazing, rocking on. We were rocking for a week.
We were indeed, Dick. Brilliant times. This is, Dick, as I say, some of the best memories I could ever wish to have. Brilliant times. Great bunch of lads. But most of all, Dick, from all the players at Neave Comkill and the club around that time, I want to thank you so much for galvanising us and pulling us together and making the game such fun.
It was fantastic, and I just want to conjure. We have an All Ireland winner in our camp. We have Thomas McKinley, Brendan.
Right.
You know what I mean? We have a good sprinkling of lads that played for our county and should have maybe got a longer run. I'd like to say a special word to absent friends. We have lost Sean McDaid, the founding member of Nave Bathin, James Dowds, and the great Diddler. May they rest in peace. I'd like to thank all our sponsors and everything down through the years. Kiernan's, Kyle's, McLaughlin's, Duffy Transport, Meat Plant Carrigan's. We won in Sean Potatoes, Potato Jersey. Leo McGurk, Maggie's, Alice's, The Hole in the Wall, People's. We'd like to thank all the public, the support we got from Leigh Bathin, Killay, Newton Cunningham, Carrigan, St Johnstone, surrounding areas, Brandon.
Declan, thanks so much. Thanks for summing that up so well. Yeah. Fair play to you, Declan. That was the summer of 1994. 94. Time flies on quick, yeah. Sir.
And the Red and White Army is still alive. And we had wonderful success since that too. So yes. Wait for the next 25.
There
Brandon.
You go, Declan. I don't know if I'll be about for it, but we'll see what happens here. Thank
the
you.
The Red and White Army is alive.
And now, folks, on the show, it's my absolute pleasure to welcome an international sporting great, but he hails from only up the road here from us, an Eve Padraig / Lifford Celtic man who's went on to do huge things, playing the Premier League, playing the Champions League, FA Cup finals, starring for Ireland at the World Cup, breaking the appearance record for Ireland. It is, of course, the one and only Shea Given.
Hi, Brendan, you okay?
I'm doing the best, Shea. All the best for talking to you, my man. You're currently taking up a coaching role at Derby. I've seen you doing bits and pieces of punditry as well. Life's busy.
Yeah. I mean, I've been at Derby now over 2 years, so it's a great learning curve for me. You know, you do the badges, you know, you probably know yourself, and then you sort of wait for an opportunity to be given to try and, you know, put your sort of stamp on a team or on some players and what have you. And you mentioned that, you know, the teams I've played for and I suppose the experience I've had in my career, then you'd like to think they could help, you know, people coming through and help to improve them. And then, you know, as I say, the old saying goes, got the T-shirt or whatever, you know, you've been there, you got the T-shirt. So it's, you know, it's nice to pass that knowledge on.
And tell me, is Wayne Rooney still trying to beat you with free kicks? Are you stepping in there at training?
Well, I'm just trying to get his standing foot a bit closer to the ball, but he's not listening to me. I'm just whipping him into the top corner without my guidance. But he's still got a lot of quality, Wayne Rooney. Of course, he has. He's, you know, great to work with as well. Obviously, what a superstar of a player he's been over his career, you know. So we're all delighted to have him at Derby.
Well, you've been right up there yourself. Yeah, just looking back, you know, I read Kieran O'Donnell's brilliant book you're involved in at Donegal Sporting Greats. And just about the start of us, we're all wee Donegal lads out there dreaming of where you went, Shea. But it all started in the back garden, you know, with your brothers. Of course, your dad was a goalkeeper all his life.
Yeah.
And you always want to impress your dad. That was the start of sport for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got obviously three brothers as well. We used to be, you know, in the garden, sort of jumpers for goalpost stuff. And my dad was a goalkeeper, obviously, a lot of people around Donegal. Maybe the older generation remember my dad playing for different teams around Donegal as well. And we used to go and watch and we, you know, every spare moment we had, we would be out in the garden and I'll be diving around the garden, you know, trying to keep the ball in the net, I suppose. It's just something I always loved doing. And I suppose that comes from dad. He was a goalkeeper as well, so I suppose it sort of filtered down from him and having older brothers as well. At that time, it was, you know, they toughened me up pretty sharply, like, you know, so
that's their job.
Great memories growing up.
That's their job. See, the first place I ever came across you was, me and you the same age. You were at Columbus, I was at St Union's. But you were a deadly striker. Gary, what was his name, was in nets at that stage. He was a good keeper himself, so he decided to maximise the squad that they had. But you were handy. Yeah. Before you started saving them, you were handy at putting them away.
Well, to be honest, I wasn't too minded to be a striker. I was a goalkeeper, and I think I was top goalscorer one season from my school and stuff, and I think there's no probably better feeling than hitting the ball in the back of the net, even now still, if I'm playing sort of in the game, score a goal, I'm off celebrating, you know, the ball hitting the net. I think that every kid sort of has that, and every adult as well, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, my dad said to me about 14 or 15, you know, I think you should focus really on the goalkeeping side of things. And you had this sort of mad thing, if you know, it's a very specialised position, and if you can, you know, tone in your sort of profession and be the best you can and be the goalkeeper, and you know, I think you've got a big chance of doing something, you know. And I suppose when you're young, 14, 15, you think, oh, I suppose every parent says that to their child, maybe in a sense, you know. But my dad genuinely did believe that there was talent there, and of course you had to work on that. But, you know, I did focus then on the goalkeeping and Brendan, and obviously, you know, it stood me in good stead for the years ahead of me.
Yeah, dad knows best. Another place you popped up then, I remember my cousin, Darky Killahan, and Mo Tolan, that I would have known Mo well. They were going on a tour to USA, but I remember you went along with them, and I remember them thinking to myself, God, them guys are a good few years older than me. This Given guy must have something about him. Do you remember that trip, sir?
Yeah, I remember that tour, actually. Yeah, I mean, it was, I think they were a couple of years older than me, to be fair. But, I mean, I was playing for Lifford Celtic when I was 15, and you know, that was a good schooling as well. I think, you know, that age, I think I was playing above my age all the time, and hopefully didn't look out of place. You know, I think when you play in the men's team, especially for Lifford, I think they, they looked after you. You know, if there was a bad challenge or something, they'd be around you, same thing again, and you're in a bit of trouble. See, after the game type thing, you know, so that I felt that the team at Lifford always were supportive and had me back, you know, and of course I had to play well to be in the team, but, you know, I felt with the experience, you know, the team had, they looked after this young goalkeeper, and you know, that was brilliant for me to play men's football at such a young age.
You went on a bit of a run in the Junior Cup around that time, was it, Ashley?
Yeah, we got to the semi-final, the Junior Cup, and I think there's like over 300 teams in all of Ireland, you know, so, you know, for a small club like Lifford Celtic, it was brilliant for us to go on that run, and I just remember memories going back, the whole town was behind us, and, you know, it was really good memories, and, you know, travelled to sort of home and away games, and I used to get changed in Harris Bar there in Lifford, you know, that was our changing room and stuff like that, you know, so it's mad how you know, you move on to, you know, playing in the San Siro and different stadiums like that around the world, and Old Trafford and what have you know, but it all started in Harris Bar in Lifford, you know, getting changed with Lifford Celtic, you know, but, you know, them memories and them times you would never change. I always remember paying the bus as well for the away games. I can't remember how much it was, a fiver or something, or £2 or £3 or whatever for the away journeys and stuff, you know, so all them things, you know, stand you in good stead and appreciate all the, you know, the brilliant stadiums that I've played at.
It's funny, as you looking at different people's stories, it seems to be a coincidence, not some kind of coincidence, that someone of your ability is there at that time, you know, one of the most special times in the club. And fantastic start, particularly because obviously if they didn't get you at the start, they weren't going to get you, because scouts were coming calling, you know, there was people from United and Celtic and all sorts looking for you to come over. But it was Liam Brady at Celtic, and of course Paddy Bonner, a hero of yours, was there. And that made, I suppose, the option in terms of, it was easy at the time, but for such a young man, 16, heading to Glasgow over to the city, so it must have been difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough decision to start with, because there's two main choices then were Celtic and Man United, you know, and it was probably my dad made the decision, much as anything, not that I regret that decision, but it was more like, you know, you're guided by your father, and I think at the time Peter Schmeichel was sort of just coming to, you know, only being at Man United a couple of years, and had a long future ahead of him, and no disrespect to Paddy, but he was in his 30s then, and he was, you know, my dad thought, you know, the quickest way of getting into the first team, that was the sort of route we looked at, and of course I was a huge Celtic fan growing up as well, and the chance to go there, and then you said, Brennan, follow Paddy's footsteps a little bit, you know, from Donegal across to Glasgow, and but it was a big step. I mean, it was really homesick the first year. I was really finding it difficult, because all my friends and mates and family are all back in Lifford, and I'm, you know, stuck in digs in Glasgow, you know, wondering where is this going to take me? And I know you sort of dream you could play in the first team and what have you, but at the same time, there's, you know, there's lots of sacrifices and lots of lonely nights, let's be honest, you know, in the digs and stuff. And, you know, it was a tough, definitely first 12 months was really, really tough, because I know a lot of players have gone across, you know, the water to different clubs and they just couldn't hack it. They didn't, you know, they just wanted to be home with their mates. And I can understand that totally, because I've been there.
I would say that mental toughness, did you, Shane? I think a lot of people just gloss over that side of things, because in your mind, of course, there's so many players, as you say, don't make it or don't come back, and you're wondering here, my education, my life, I'm missing my family. You have so much, probably, that somewhat of a fear in the background. What if this doesn't work out? And I mean, with you, obviously it did, and plenty more. And then you just look at this brilliant career. But at that time, see, you were obviously training every day, looking to make your mark at the underage teams, and just going back to digs. Who were you saying? Was there a fella from Derry there with you, Melly?
Yeah, well, originally I was in a place in Denniston. I don't know if you're listening. I know Glasgow very well, but Denniston's quite a rough place, and I didn't know Denniston either. And the first night I stayed there, I went to close the curtain to go to sleep, and some guy chucked a bag of fish and chips over there and gave me a few dodgy hand signals. And I was like, wow, she closed the curtains, jumped under the covers, and was like, please, you know, hopefully tomorrow comes type thing, you know, because, you know, my first night away, it wasn't a good start. So I spoke to Liam Brady myself after that, and I thought, you know, I don't feel comfortable, you know, in this place. And I suppose someone so young to be that sort of, to go and speak to the manager. But to be fair to Liam, he spoke to the, you know, the powers of being, got me shifted out to Bishop Briggs, where it was, you're quite right in saying, there's a guy called Nigel Melly who was from Derry, and you know, he was in the same digs, and I think, you know, Liam obviously thought that'd be a good sort of fit, which it was. Nigel was a bit older than me and had his own car and stuff, you know, so gave me a lift into the training ground sometimes, and had to get the bus back normally, because we'd be training in the afternoons, the, you know, the youth players and stuff. But you know, it was a lot better. I had like a, you know, a couple looking after some treatment for us every night. It was just a better fit, to be honest, you know. But it was a big sort of, you know, shock the first night in Glasgow, to be honest.
That makes me feel a bit better, Shaver. I mean, you know, you and Melly on a Saturday cruising around Glasgow having a look around you. That's a bit of a better picture.
Elbows out the window, two dice hanging from the bar in the middle, like, you know, thinking we'd made it.
Yes, boy, the scooter tunes in the background. Tell me, you started well at Celtic. You were getting noticed, you were working your way up. You even made it to the bench of a couple of the senior games. One was actually an Old Firm as well, still at a very young boy. You must have been thinking, as much as that would have been some balls, it would have been nerve-wracking to get thrown in.
I was only 17 at the time. I actually went back to Donegal after the Christmas and I got a phone call saying, you have to come back because Gordon Marshall got injured and we need you to be on the bench, basically. So I was like, okay, first flight back to Glasgow and you know, I was on the bench for an Old Firm game, which was phenomenal. Like, it was just like obviously one of the biggest games in probably European football, the Old Firm. People who'd never been to a game wouldn't maybe understand it, but you know, I'm sure I know a lot of people in Donegal have been to these Old Firm games and they can appreciate the atmosphere and the excitement and the pressure that comes with them, you know. And I was 17 on the bench thinking, you know, Paddy Bunner was playing and, you know, thinking if he gets injured in the warm up or in the game then I'm in, you know, I'm in front of all these fans and the pressure was massive, you know. But I'm not saying I wasn't nervous, but I was excited, nervous and you know, sort of semi hoping I would get on, but at the same time glad I didn't in the end because I was only 17, you know. So you didn't want to make a mistake, you know, that sort of level. But it was a great experience, definitely bringing experience on the bench for that.
Yeah, very specialised goalkeeper, very different coming on the pitch, getting a touch and getting your way into the game. For a goalkeeper, you have to command your area, you have to do so many things right, which is why we keepers sometimes it happens that small bit later, because the experience is so vital, Shay. But so you're right, great experience to be on the bench. Just have waited your time. But Shay, Celtic, things didn't work out. There wasn't a great contract on offer. You come back home and you got a call from Kenny Dalglish then to go to, at the time, was Jack Walker's money bags Blackburn. He was a Doc Martin guy, wasn't that the, was that the guy, Shay? Did he own it?
Jack Walker was into sort of metal.
Was it metal? Right.
So he's a big Blackburn fan and obviously from Blackburn and obviously invested in the club, you know. But yeah, I mean, my dad was sort of, there was an offer put on the table at Celtic and we said no, like, and that was it. He goes, okay then, see you later. So it was like, okay then. No, my dad says basically, well, you can come back to Ireland, or worst case, you know, you play in League of Ireland or whatever, because, you know, that's unacceptable really. So that's what we did. But we did feel, and I felt, and he felt, and I think a lot of people, maybe even at Celtic, probably coaches and stuff, felt that, you know, this was one that maybe shouldn't have been leaving the club, you know. But there was no second offer, nothing came, and that was the end of it basically. So, you know, as you say, got the phone call off Kenny at the house and over we went to Blackburn and you know, signed a 3-year contract. Kenny was brilliant for me. Not just bringing me to Blackburn, but he brought me to Newcastle at 21 as well. So I got so much time and respect for Kenny Dalglish. You know, he put a lot of faith in me at a young age and, you know, he was brilliant for me.
Well, I say we were, personally, I was always watching out for you, always watching, seeing, and you know, you went on loan a couple of times, particularly Sunderland, and they were raving about you. And even then, Shay, and I mean this honestly, I was so proud of you because I was thinking, I know this lad. Like, there's not many people in the Premier League, you know, and every time your name would pop up, and particularly with that time you kept so many clean sheets with Sunderland, I was like, brilliant, you know. Ireland was calling in the background, but of course, as you said, that move to Newcastle then, up to the Mad Geordies, this was to be, I suppose, the club you spent the most amount of time with. Shay, and had some fantastic years with them, you know. They were, you know, anybody who's been to Newcastle, I've been there, mad about their football, and they were so close, Shay, to some major things in that time there. I mean, it's still obviously a major thing to play in the Premier League and cup finals, and you've played in the Champions League, some fantastic things, but even come second in the league, Shay, cup finals, etc., you know, you're a real talented team.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic memories again. We just think one thing we fell short was winning something. You know, that was the biggest regret really, that we didn't, you know, pick up something for the fans and for ourselves, I suppose, as well, because, you know, that's the big disappointment. You say we got the semi-finals, FA Cup finals. I don't know. We beat Barcelona in the Champions League. We've done lots of different things, and we couldn't just get over the line to get a trophy on the mantelpiece. You know, so that was the biggest sort of thing that disappoints me about the Newcastle thing. You know, and I'm sure the fans feel the same way, but. You know, it was a fantastic club, still is a great club. You know, it's a football club, 52,000 people in the heart of the city. You know, it's a special place to play, you know, it's a special place to be part of. And I was there nearly 12 years of my life, you know, so it was a long, long time. But, you know, Kenny again gave me the faith, a 21-year-old goalkeeper going into the Premier League, gave me the number one jersey and says, right, there you go, on you go. So show him what you got type thing, you know. So
yeah.
It takes, you know, a big manager or a big person to do that as well, because even in the modern game now, you know, there's not very many 21-year-olds who keep be given the number one jersey at a big club. And you know, that's testament to the manager as much as anyone.
In the small world it is, Shane, your sister Michelle was down at the college living with my sister Margaret. And I remember the story of you landing back. It must have been after this big contract, because you went all out and got them with four lanterns. But Margaret says you landed back and how she described it, a banana coloured car. And Shane, I don't know, is her memory. That's the champagne cider has affected her head a bit. But you must have landed back in some version of a sports car, and you must have flashed the cash.
Yeah, it wasn't a Lamborghini or Ferrari, it was a Volkswagen Golf, but yeah, it was quite bright yellow, so...
There you go, she was right.
It was funny, actually, once I went to, was in Dublin, and came back, actually, this is really big time, and I came back in a helicopter, and I didn't pay for that. A friend of mine had it, and he threw me back to do something in Dublin, blah, blah, blah. So my brother Liam comes out, and he goes, that man left in a link box, and he came back in a helicopter, like, how's he changed and all that? Do you know what I mean? But Michelle's actually there now, doing all the loads of Pilates stuff. She's doing great with her personal classes and stuff, and works out a lot of kidney there. So she's doing great with that. You know, she's always been very sporty, as you know, Michelle, as well. You know, so she's enjoying doing that side of things now too.
Yeah. And so, listen, you went to Man City again. You had a great time at Man City, a great time for Mark Hughes. You and him bonded well.
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic to be part of going to Man City. You know, the club was... just a year before, taken over by obviously Sheikh Mansour and Paul Dunne, were owning the club at that point, you know. So it was fantastic that they come to pick me to become their goalkeeper. You know, look at the finances they had and stuff, and they could have picked any goalkeeper in the world, you know. So they wanted to get me at the club. So that was a huge sort of thing for me to go, this is a club really heading somewhere, really ambitious football club, and wanted to, you know, go and challenge at the top of the Premier League. And at the time when I left Newcastle, it was. You know, selling all the best players, signing free transfers, not really going anywhere with no ambition, and you know, that there was too good an opportunity really to turn down, you know, and I was really excited about joining Manchester City.
Yeah, well, like I say, I'm not surprised. I mean, you're voted more than once as the best keeper in the Premier League, and you're always right up there with the best keepers. You know, it was something I wasn't surprised at. Now, I have a friend, Piers Cullinan Derry, big Arsenal fan, was asking, was this man about to move to Arsenal at one stage? There was loads of rumours about you be different teams, Shay. Was that ever a thing with the top four in particular, that you kind of looked and think, I should be playing there, particularly when you were at the very top of the game in terms of keepers in the Premier League?
Yeah, well, I think you're always ambitious. I think that, you know, from my left home, I was always ambitious to be the best I could and be at the best clubs I could and be at the biggest clubs and challenge them at the top, you know. So that was one of the reasons behind the Manchester City move. I mean, the Arsenal thing, there was a lot of mixed speculation in the papers and stuff and what have you. And even later in my career, when I was at Aston Villa, I could have went to Liverpool, actually, and was on the way up the motorway, and the two owners couldn't agree in the end or something, so I had to turn around and go back again. But, you know, it's just, you know, sometimes things are taken out of your hand as well, and you have to, I suppose, respect the people who you signed the contract with as well, you know. But, you know, I think, you would love to have, for me personally, would have loved to have played at the club and won the Premier League. You know, that would have been nice and on the cake, really, you know. But that just never happened. It never, you know, it never materialised. And I suppose the downside of my career a little bit. But, you know, you can only do your best for the club you're playing
That's
for.
It.
And there's 11 players in the team, and you're part of the 11 players, you know. So
I think
not always that easy.
I think that's always about, like, you know, you look at other players down the league a bit and say, okay, let you play in a cup final, let you play in the Champions League. I mean, it was for you, say, World Cup as well, you know, going over to Ireland here, you know, you've been involved since under 16, playing with all the different age groups, you know, your debut in 96. Paddy was still about at the time, him and Alan Kelly was injured, and Mick McCarthy, of course, another man that seen the talent that was in you, gave you a chance, and say you went on, as I say, to break records in terms of appearances, and of course, play in the World Cup, and again, complete dream stuff, going back to that wee lad in Lifford playing in the backyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was a dream come true, really. I mean, it was, you know, my dad used to go and watch the Ireland games as a kid and watch the players and try and get their autographs and stuff when you've seen them and what have you. And you know, obviously, we all growing up in Lifford and Donegal watching the World Cups and stuff, and they were such special memories as a fan, to be honest. And then, you know, I've gone sort of full circle, and when you first pull on that jersey, it's, you know, that's a dream come true in itself. You think that would never happen, you know, growing up in Lifford. And then, of course, the pinnacle and the highlight of was anyone's career is to play in the World Cup finals, you know. So it was full circle to go as a fan and watch Ireland and remember Packy making that penalty save against the Mofty, and then I was out in the garden, you know, commentating, then that was Packy Bonner and stuff, and then, you know, fast forward 10 years or whatever many years it was, and then, you know, it's me in the pitch, and it's me, you know, in Japan and Korea representing the Republic of Ireland, and I can only imagine people back in Donegal, young kids diving around the garden pretending to Shay Given, which even me saying that now seems a bit weird, to be honest, but I'm sure that was the case, you know, because you always get associated with, you know, especially as you said before, someone that maybe you knew or from your own county. It makes you that bit more proud that he's playing for Ireland.
Shay, brilliant stuff. Listen, thanks so much. I can only imagine the amount of keepers were diving about and trying to copy everything that you did. Shay, you were an absolute legend for all of us over in Donegal, watching over the years. Keep up the good work, and thanks so much for joining us this evening on the DL Debate.
No problem at all, Ben. Thanks for having me on, man.
Thanks, Shay. Take care, bud. Well, that was great talking to three top men there, Mick McGrath, Shay Given, and the one and only Declan McFarlane. I want to thank Kenneth for producing the show this evening. We look forward to Donegal Tyrone next week. All the feedback will be here on the DL Debate. Same time, I'll chat to you then.
The DL Debate is brought to you by the Dry Arch Complex 24-hour service station, Letterkenny. We're here for all your needs.